Marxist Doublethink and the Disabling of Resistance, December the 19th, 2023. One of the big questions facing all of us trapped inside today's increasingly totalitarian global system is, how do we get here? How is it ever possible that human beings, once as free as any other wild creature on the planet, were able to be captured by a small minority of their own kind and reduced to a degraded and disempowered condition of complete dependency on their jailers? There are some interesting clues in A.L. Morton's A People's History of England, first published in 1938. He looks back to the origins of tribal society in the Stone Age, in which an egalitarian ethos prevailed. Quote, "The food that was gathered for the social group, the animals that were hunted, the fish that was caught, were jointly produced and jointly consumed." End quote. He describes small kinship groups, probably, quote, "uniting the descendants of common great-grandparents," end quote, which exchanged goods, primarily food, with other groups, and also sought mates outside their own tribe. Quote, "The kin was, in fact, a group of tremendous social cohesion. A man without kin was like a fish without water, helpless, doomed," end quote. Morton writes about the migrations of the Celts across Europe and to Britain more than 2,000 years ago in the shape of, quote, "large tribes composed of free warriors under tribal chiefs, accompanied by considerable numbers of women and children," end quote. He notes, quote, "while Celtic tribal society cannot be described as classless, its class divisions were not sharply marked or of decisive importance. The difference between chief and free tribesmen was one of degree rather than of kind," end quote. But over time there was, quote, "a gradual weakening and breakup of tribal society and its eventual replacement by feudalism," end quote, beginning a process which was ultimately to see the English people, quote, "driven from the land," end quote, by the arrival of industrialism. Morton identifies a key stage in this long-term loss of freedom as coming after 600 AD, when central power began to re-emerge after a hiatus following the Romans' departure. Social divisions were already increasing, private property and land was beginning to take shape, and the state, growing out of the military conquest and division of the country by the Anglo-Saxons, was, quote, "superseding the looser tribal organisation that served the English in their German homeland," end quote. The historian then declares, quote, "such a process, marked by the acquisition of special powers by a minority and at the expense of the remainder of the people, is in fact the only way in which society can advance beyond the tribal stage and must, for all its harshness, be regarded as essentially progressive," end quote. I found this passage absolutely shocking. It is, in fact, a textbook real-life instance of the mental process that George Orwell terms doublethink in his novel 1984, this being, quote, "the power of holding two contradictory beliefs in one's mind simultaneously and accepting both of them," end quote. Morton is plainly aware that the process he is describing was a bad thing, referring to the harshness of the acquisition of special powers by a minority and at the expense of the remainder of the people, as he put it. But he cannot bring himself to end the sentence without expressing the view that at one and the same time, it was a good and necessary thing. We also see unfolding, in real time, as it were, in the writing of this sentence, the technique by which doublethink is achieved, which Orwell calls crime stop, the ability not to allow oneself to think in ways unapproved by the party. What inner voice is Morton obeying when he declares that the domination of the majority by a little powerful clique must be seen as progressive? It's worth recalling that Orwell called the ruling ideology of the Big Brother regime INGSOC, short for English Socialism, even though he was himself a sort of English socialist, albeit of a libertarian and culturally traditionalist variety. He did so because he could see the authoritarianism, dogmatism and intellectual dishonesty that characterised the communist left. He'd been appalled by this after fighting with the socialist PUM and the anarchists in the Spanish Revolution, only to find his freedom-loving comrades, who had refused to obey orders from Stalin, being smeared by communists as fascists who were secretly working for Franco. I can't help being reminded of the way that those of us who spoke up for freedom during the COVID clampdown were, and still are, subjected to similar lies and insults from contemporary equivalents on the left. Morton, our doublethink historian, was a Marxist, and a conscientious one at that, judging by the way that he feels the need to apologise for the inclusion in his bibliography of many books, quote, written by non-Marxist historians with a standpoint which I believe to be quite mistaken, end quote. Furthermore, A People's History of England was apparently adopted quasi-officially as the Communist Party's national history. Morton had a keen interest in William Blake and William Morris, two organic radical inspirations whose overlapping vision was a long way from Marxist orthodoxy, and who were deeply opposed to state control and industrialism. But he had to write, evidently against his better instincts, that the emergence of a central state and capitalism was a progressive thing, because that is how Marxist dogma says socialism will ultimately be achieved. The inner voice stopping short his historical crime think was the internalised one of the party, which in his case was the Communist Party of Great Britain. It is certain that many people have learned much from the economic and social analysis of Karl Marx and his multitude of disciples, such as Morton. But the trouble is that the ideology is a total dead end. It describes and criticises the current system, but does not provide us with a way out of it. As Morton's remarks illustrate, the existence of the state and of industrial so-called progress are essential to its idea of how communism will arrive, even if an eventual withering away of the state is theoretically imagined. The state is the structure used by a power-hungry minority to impose its control and domination of the majority. Its laws, its tax gathering, its policing, its surveillance, its brainwashing education. When this power-hungry minority indulges in usury to sustain and amplify its power, this manifests in physical terms as development or industrial progress. Marxist ideology fails to challenge either of these phenomena, instead claiming, as Morton spells out, that they are necessary stages on the glorious road to communism. Furthermore, you must not suggest otherwise on pain of being denounced by the communist think poll as reactionary, utopian, counter-revolutionary or fascist. When you add into the mix the general Marxist hostility to any kind of spirituality, you are looking at a so-called oppositional ideology that totally fails to oppose the essence of the system it pretends to combat. All it proposes is a different method of managing the same dehumanising machineries of state and development. Anarchists have been onto this for a long time, of course. Mikhail Bakunin, 1814 to 1876, accused the Marxists of ignoring a number of natural traits, as he put it, such as, quote, the intensity of the instinct of revolt, and by the same token, of liberty, end quote. Gustav Landauer, 1870 to 1919, described Marxist dogma as, quote, the plague of our times, end quote, bemoaning the, quote, grotesque wrongness of their materialist conception of history, end quote, in which they reduced everything to, quote, what they call economic and social reality, end quote. Emma Goldman, 1869 to 1940, called Marxism, quote, colourless and mechanistic, end quote, and said she had witnessed in Bolshevik Russia, quote, the best human values betrayed, the very spirit of revolution daily crucified, end quote. And a bit more recently, Freddie Perlman, 1934 to 1985, argued that Marxism was, quote, a pseudo-resistance, which was in fact an instrument for the final reduction of human activity to a mere variable of capital, end quote. Over recent decades, anarchist movements and thinking have been increasingly corrupted by Marxist influences and polluted by so-called libertarian communism. Although it's not the same thing as contemporary woke ideology, I do think that this communist tendency undermined, confused and weakened anarchist understanding to the point that it became vulnerable to takeover by toxic corporate complicit dogma. Anarchism was basically dragged down to a lower level by Marxism, which has fundamentally failed to provide us with a vision of human history that sees beyond the limits established by the system. Indeed, you could say that Marxism is one of those limits, a gatekeeping ideology, which, by insisting that the theft of our natural freedom is a necessary and progressive advance, turns us completely away from any attempt to seize it back.